Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Sienna Miller tackles playing an American woman in American Woman and helps tell the story of the birth of Fox News. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Happy to say we have a first-time guest on the podcast today, Sienna Miller. Always been a fan of hers, and she is definitely killing it lately. I took note in this conversation that the last 5 years for Sienna Miller in particular, I don't know, for my money, are the best five of her career. Not that she wasn't, you know, didn't have a great career going already, but you know, you look at the filmmakers that she's been working with in theater, working on Cabaret and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, working in films like Foxcatcher and American Sniper and Mississippi Grind and Lost City of Z. And now this June, as I alluded to in the opening, having two really weighty projects, you know, it's all going pretty well for Sienna Miller. So thrilled to have her at this moment in her life and career. The two projects are, of course, American Woman, which opens this Friday. Well worth checking out. This is an intimate kind of character study. Great performances from Sienna in the lead role alongside the likes of Christina Hendricks and Aaron Paul. Tells the story of a woman who, you know, working class woman who's been beset by loss and tragedy and hardships, some of which, you know, we all face and some of which are pretty extreme. She's a young mother who is left to take care of her grandchild when her own daughter goes missing. And it's one of her best pieces of acting, I think, ever. And she'd agree with that. She certainly says in this conversation it was her favorite filmmaking experience. So well worth celebrating this intimate character drama amid the big budget spectacle of summer. The other film, rather TV project I want to mention, is a five-part miniseries called The Loudest Voice, which does tell the story of the birth of Fox News, primarily around Roger Ailes, the infamous head of Fox News, who's since passed away in the last couple of years. But Sienna plays Elizabeth Ailes, his wife, opposite Russell Crowe. I've only seen the first episode of this, but it is kind of delicious and very enjoyable, if a little sad and tragic, given the state of our times these days, but also fascinating given Sienna's own history with Rupert Murdoch and Fox. Sienna infamously was beset by paparazzi and phone hacking and really fought back against it all and, in fact, sued News of the World and won. And the fact that she's now in a show like this, in a story like this, is kind of poetic justice. Sienna's one of the category of people I love the most, which is self-deprecating Brits. So it was a real pleasure to have her on the podcast. She came in on a very rainy New York day, the day after the Tonys, where she presented, and we fought through the elements, including a fire alarm. Glamorous world of podcasting. What can I say? And I will say it's her first podcast ever. At least that she remembers, and I can tell. So, welcome to the podcasting world, Sienna Miller. What else to mention? Well, here's a big, exciting, you know, annual tradition for me. The MTV Movie Awards are coming up. Oh, I still said Movie Awards. It's the MTV Movie and TV Awards. Yes, we celebrate it all now. That's coming up next Monday night on MTV. I'm co-hosting the red carpet pre-show that's going to be streamed on Twitter. Don't worry, I'll send out all the info on my socials, but that'll be a fun opportunity to talk to all the amazing presenters and winners and nominees, and Zachary Levi is hosting. It's going to be a great time. So tune in for that. In addition, yes, I'm mentioning all the exciting things happening. I'm a bore, but these are cool things. After Hours on Comedy Central, some exciting new episodes are, one is up, one is about to go up. I had a chance to tape an After Hours sketch with the great Adam Scott. Love that guy. Love him. And he brought it to this crazy little sketch that involves fighting for a check in a restaurant. Wackiness ensues. Go to the After Hours YouTube page, Comedy Central's YouTube page. Go to the After Hours Facebook page, or again, check out my social media. I've sent out the links, but I encourage you guys to check it out. It's a super fun one. There's also a great sketch coming in the next couple days, starring a recent podcast guest of mine making his After Hours debut, and it's a good one. Star Trek fans, you'll appreciate it. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, that's it. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to Happy, Sad, Confused. Spread the good word and enjoy this conversation with Sienna Miller.
These posters are so good.
This gives you a sense of the inside of my brain.
I love it. It's
like, yeah. I how old you are? No, I'm just kidding.
We must be the same age. How old are you?
I'm 43.
Okay, a little 37.
Older. Yeah, yeah.
Similar.
Similar-ish. Yeah, this was the childhood bedroom I probably wanted when I was a kid. So I've made up for lost time. Should we have a chat? It's super casual, as you
perfect.
Can tell.
Should I move that one off?
You know, I mean, maybe like, don't obsess about it, but okay. You're fine. Sienna Miller has come by my office on a rainy New York day. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you too.
A lot going on. Thank you for stopping by. I've seen American Woman. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I'm already obsessed with The Loudest Voice. I only saw the first episode of that one, but I'm gonna eat that one up.
Good.
And you had a big night last night. You got to celebrate with the theater community in New York.
Well,
they always say the theater. Is there really a theater community?
There is a real community. I mean, I feel like a total imposter when I'm in it, but I've done a few plays.
Yeah.
I feel like the community side of it is much more the musical theater people because they,
right.
I think they've just been around each other forever. And that's a very close, tight knit group that I sort of dipped a toe into because I did one musical. But no, it's very loving and warm and cozy and.
Yeah. There's so much. Yeah, there's a lot of love
of
in that
warmth.
Room.
Yeah. Yeah, there really is, genuinely.
Do you see a lot of theater yourself?
I do. I try to.
Yeah. What's the last great thing you've seen?
What was the last great thing I've seen? I saw The Ferryman, which I think is astounding.
I'm jealous. That's been on my list for a while.
You've got to see it.
Did you see the original cast?
I did see it with the original cast. I saw something pretty obscure at The Shed, which I'm blanking on the name Ben. Ben Whishaw, who's astounding. It was like Marilyn Monroe, I can't remember the name, which is just awful.
That's all good.
But it was pretty brave and great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried to see. I saw Fleabag.
I finally caught up on the TV show at least, so I at least have that.
Yeah, she was performing in this tiny theater in the West Village, and it was she's pretty epic as well.
Yeah, I did. Thankfully, I saw Hadestown, so I feel like I got.
Oh,
at least,
how is
like,
it?
It's amazing.
Is it?
The music is remarkable,
yeah.
And it's had quite a story. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Are you more of like a one act play kind of person, or like an 8 hour Angels in America day? Like, what's like.
I mean, I have to be honest, I love going to the theater more than anything in the world, but when I see that it's 1 hour 40 with no intermission, there's a part of me that celebrates.
Yeah.
That being said, like a sweeping epic that holds you is as nourishing, if not, I mean, obviously probably more.
Yeah.
But bad theater is hard.
Right.
And I've been a part of it as well as seen it.
Please.
It's not easy for anyone.
Oh, and we can hear that. Apparently there's a fire alarm going off, which is always fun in a podcast, Sienna.
So, yeah, it's real life.
It adds a little bit of character.
Slice of life.
Hopefully we're not going to burn down.
Slowly towards the exit. It's not a...
We're rebels. The podcast must go on is my motto.
Yes. I can't understand a word of it. I mean, if that's a genuine fire, then we're really dead.
We're doomed. What a way to go, though, on a podcast.
Yeah.
Is this your first podcast? I was doing some research. I don't think
I've heard you. It might be my first. I'm completely ignorant when it comes to podcasts.
Really?
I just discovered them. Actually, while doing prosthetics for The Loudest Voice, there was not a lot else I could do except to listen to podcasts. So I did Serial,
very good.
Adnan Syed.
Yes.
Thing, which was just one of the most compelling things I've ever listened to. So now I'm into them. But this, you might be... popping my podcast cherry.
This clearly is not as much import and weight. Maybe you bring the weight to it. You bring the import to it.
But
it's not exactly. We're not freeing people from prison on this one.
Well, or not. Oh,
we never know.
Spoiler.
We don't.
So far.
So I've always been a fan of your work, and there's a lot to cover. And it's interesting, you know. It's when you have an opportunity to talk to somebody at length, and you look at what they're up to recently, and you start to kind of like. Create like a narrative around their career, and that's like more my job than your job. You're not probably sitting there being like, well, this was phase one, this was phase two. But here's what I will say. I feel like the last 5 years have been the best 5 years of your career. Like, would you agree with me? I mean, if you look at the theater, the filmmakers, and the kinds of roles you've had,
yeah, I'd say on paper you are definitely right.
Okay, on paper, interesting.
No, it looks impressive, but happened in the last 5 years is I became a parent and perception shifted, and yes, I worked with some amazing directors, so that definitely no. I definitely feel like I have been able to play more interesting roles with more interesting people, but at the same time, I was doing theatre before, and I also worked with great filmmakers before, and I made some films I'm proud of before. It was just a little bit messier.
Right.
It's a little more linear. Grounded now.
Have your priorities changed in terms of like what you're going after, or are you noticing different kind of things coming to you in the last 5 years, or is it like, how much are you steering your own ship, and how much does it feel like you're just riding the wave?
I think before I was so kind of leaf in the wind mentality in my 20s. I was like, a movie, fun, where, great, go. Mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't much strategizing, and I'm not really a strategist. It's something I have to work on. Nowadays, it has to be something that's got at least like 3 of the 5 essential ingredients for me to even contemplate doing it, because it means,
right,
you know, it's compromising time with my kid time away from home, which I struggle with. I'm just a little bit more conscious.
And so what?
In every aspect.
She's a little more awake and aware of the outside world.
I'm here, guys. I'm right here. Present
that,
and
that
correct.
Applies to everybody in their 20s. It takes us all to... So what are the priorities then? You said 3 of the 5. I assume it's not like a specific actual list.
I said that
list,
and then I was like, fuck, I better come up with my priorities. Soundbite. No. Isn't that what a podcast is? I'd say, you know, excellent director, irrespective of the role. Mm-hmm. Therefore, an interesting set. Great script, great co-stars. I'm running out.
No, that works. Those make sense.
Yeah. I mean, it has to have... Before, it was just like, oh, I love this part. What a fun thing to do.
Yes.
Irrespective of what the state of the script was, which was often diabolical. And then you kind of rewrite as you're there, and it doesn't turn out great, and you're good in something that's not good, or you're not. It just becomes devastating after a while.
are you as tough on yourself as you maybe once were, or more or less
tough
so?
Tough on myself?
Yeah.
I think always.
Really?
Yeah.
That doesn't get it easier, you don't shake it off and be like, it's not the end of the world if this film, this particular role, this experience wasn't what I wanted it to be.
I'm tough in the middle of the experience, but if it doesn't work out, you know, that's something I've never been that focused on the outcome of something.
Right, it's the process.
Selfishly, it's much more about my experience doing it.
That's good.
I think, yeah, I don't think I'd ever read a review of anything. I do care a little bit more now because I think I put a lot into it.
Right.
It's crushing if it's crushed, but at the same time, you know, if it does well, obviously it's a bonus.
Sure.
Everybody's lying if they say they don't care about that. I just didn't used to look at numbers or Rotten Tomatoes. No, every now and then on a hangover, I'll be like, yeah.
No, it doesn't deserve to be called Rotten Tomatoes. That makes it sound too classy and important.
Rotten Tomatoes.
No, it's Rotten Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes. Tomatoes.
So American Woman is the kind of film that probably doesn't come along too often.
Yes.
It's the kind of project that doesn't reach theaters too often, doesn't exist in our landscape nowadays. How tough is it to get something like this actually made even at this point?
You know, it's not easy. It had the machinery of Scott Free behind it. It had the producers of Manchester by the Sea. It has like great ingredients supporting it. And even then, it's still so hard to get an independent film out. So the fact that it's coming out is great because it deserves to. I think it's like a beautiful independent film about real life and courage and bravery. And it's not just about this missing kid, which is, if you watch the trailer, you'll want a Prozac with your popcorn, but it actually is really funny. And
yeah, you think it's almost like when I was even reading the summary, I'm like, is this a genre kind of a film, a kind of a thriller kind of thing? It's really less about that than it is truly a character study. And the scope of it is kind of, it's in a weird way, it reminded me, it's like kind of apples and oranges, but like the way Boyhood kind of tracked like those, whatever, 12 years of coming
of
age.
Except we didn't have the 20 years to do it.
You didn't have the 20 years and, you know, it's a different stage of life, but it is really a fascinating arc for this woman who has been dealt a lot of blows and is dealing with grief and loss and
but there is no knocking this woman down, and I love that about her. I mean, she's got such moxie as a character, and to have that, you know, she begins as someone who, you know, you could judge she's flawed and messy, and it's kind of epic the journey that she goes on. And I just think you love her. Like, she's a really lovable woman in all of her mess.
Are the days then you're working on this just sort of like manna from heaven? It's like, this is why I do what I do. Like, I get to work with, like, you know, Christina Hendricks and Aaron Paul, and then Jake Scott's a talent behind the camera. It's like, and these kind of opportunities are rare for anybody.
Yeah.
So when you're in the moment, are you appreciative of that kind of experience, or are you also like, where's your head at?
I'm trying to remember. It feels cathartic. It feels fulfilling and nourishing in the way that like a great role does. But it also was it was really hard. A lot of it was really grueling and emotionally exhausting.
Yeah.
But there's catharsis in that, because actors are just weird. You know, put yourself in your nightmarish situation and spend time imagining it, and, you know, and then feel good at the end of the day.
It's like, almost broke me, isn't that awesome? Yeah.
We're suckers for punishment. But yeah, the overwhelming feeling of the experience was definitely the most creative, fulfilling film experience I've ever had.
Really?
Certainly, yeah. And theatre is different, because you get that every night. But this felt like the greatest role I'd ever been given.
Amazing.
And that was a good feeling.
And then do you feel like it's more your baby, where you have to, like, again, this doesn't have,
well,
like...
Well, now I care. I don't have, like, some massive male co-star to hide behind.
Right.
If it flops, it's not my fault. It's his fault. You know, now it's like, oh, and it's so hard with a little film. But, yeah, I definitely feel like this is my movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I've ever had that on my own. I can say for certain that I've never single-handedly carried a film.
And how does it feel to watch this one versus your other work? Can you take pride in the finished product? Or, again, are you just thinking back to the experience?
I want to be really English and say, no, I'm not proud of it. I'm proud of it. I'm in America, man. I'm going to fucking say it. No, I'm proud of it, because I couldn't have done any more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like that was a great script and a really great director and some amazing actors. And so the experience was good. So it's kind of a nice memory versus the alternative, which has happened too. But yeah, I did my absolute best and I gave my all. And that's a good feeling. That being said, I've now seen the final cut at the premiere. I don't need to see it again. I'm not going to.
You don't have it on a loop
some
at home?
People,
my gosh, check
really
this out.
Keep going back. I'm good. I can't. I get to a point and I'm sort of done with them.
Yeah.
Maybe when I'm 80, I'll be withering away in some apartment I remember.
Put up the DVD. We don't have DVD player Sienna anymore. I don't know. Find something.
Alexa, play me.
Play the best of Sienna Miller.
Yes.
How long a shoot is this one? Is this like one of those things that's...
28 days?
Yeah.
6-day weeks. Sharon Mass.
All the glamour and glitz.
Oh, God. Yeah, you know, hitchhiking to work, basically.
Really?
No, not quite. Transfer vans. Super chic.
On the other side of... I mean, not the other side, but, like, again, I've only seen the first episode of Loudest Voice, but this is just, like, made
for
me.
You're going to abbreviate, then, of Loudest.
Yeah, LV. TLV.
Moving out from AW to...
exactly. AW to TLV.
So in Loudest, how did you... you hate it when actors do that?
I mean, I speak like I'm Variety Headlines. Like, all, you know, those bizarre, like, acronyms.
Well,
and
Voice, you were... Oh, so annoying.
This one is fascinating, because this kind of tells the birth of Fox News, which...
Wonderful.
Oh, what a gift. Another gift.
Yes.
Thank
you, Rupert.
I confess, there was a period of time where I would, like, hate watch it. I would just sort of, like...
Oh, me too.
Yeah, and my wife was always like, why are you doing this? Like, you don't need to...
Yeah.
We don't need to know what there's...
If there's some liberal crisis going on, I do flick between the two, and it's astoundingly compelling. Like, there are moments where I get sucked in, and 20 minutes later, I'm like, I'm a goddamn Republican right now. Like, you have to tear yourself away. I mean, it's very powerful.
Yeah, it's a different world.
They believe it.
Yeah.
And that conviction is, like... numbing.
So how much, what you know, we talked about sort of like the algorithm of like taking on a role, like how much there's an interesting set of circumstances around this one. I mean, you've had your own story passed with Rupert Murdoch and Fox. Does that play into any of this at all?
The Schadenfreude and taking this story on? Not at all.
No.
I mean, there's definitely a part of me that is fascinated by those characters and what goes into creating this kind of network and what the effect of it is. But I wish there was some sort of vengeance. Some final, but you know, bringing down the news of the world was really enough.
So. Right.
I feel like I did eventually.
You did your part? Yeah, yeah. So this is gravy.
No, this is just exploration. I don't know, I think in this moment of time, like, what is that? What is Fox News? What is the effect of it on our world? Like, that's a, just an interesting place to be.
Yeah.
And who is married to Roger Ailes? Like, what is that dynamic?
What's happening at home? Who are these people?
Yeah, because behind every great man, as the saying goes, she's just really interesting and so different to anyone I'd ever played. And it was so astounding to be cast, to be seen as being able to do that was I was very happy.
As you mentioned, fair amount of prosthetics. There's a lot, the prosthetics budget on this one must have been through the roof you and Russell.
Yes.
So when you're sitting at a table with Russell, you're under all of this, he's under all of that.
Yeah.
What do you think, like, what is that? What is that moment like? Is it like, this is showbiz, this is why I got into this, or this is, or what, like, what are we doing here?
I mean, there are moments of like, total elation at the fact that you are unrecognizable to yourself, and what that does creatively is just, like, very liberating. So that's fun for the first week. And then the glue goes
four
on.
Hours I mean, every
it's,
day?
It's a really, it's intense.
I'm sure.
We actually got it down to 2 hours in the last week, which made me want to blow my brains out. Russell worked obviously more days. It's great for all the reasons you imagine it would be great, and it's really arduous and tedious for all the matter. You know,
what brought you to podcasts? At least there's an upside.
Yeah,
in that
exactly,
chair.
Exactly. Whole new world opened up.
Well, you were going to work
taking
with,
them off is a good feeling.
How long does
chucking
that take?
Chucking bits of chin at Russell.
Yeah, that must be.
No, honestly.
Do you get to take it off yourself, or do they have to gently
remove
it?
You can't, because you'd rip your skin off.
I was going to say.
I mean, you know, there was a moment where I looked fantastic every time. First of all, you feel good when it comes off, even if you look monstrous underneath. But I think it peeled off so many layers of skin that I had this kind of glow going. Now it's just withered.
This is the new beauty
like
regimen.
Raisin. No, we would lob bits of silicone at each other, which was quite funny.
You almost worked with him once before in Robin Hood, didn't you?
Yeah.
That's bizarre. What happened on that one?
Well,
funny story, Josh.
No, the story I was told, and I guess I believe it because it would just crush me to not, but was that they ultimately thought at the time I was too young to be his love interest. And thankfully, Kate Blanchett replaced me, who is a few years older.
Right.
If it had been someone my age, I would have.
That wouldn't have been a good
flung
moment.
Myself off, off the Hollywood sign.
It's all connected.
Like that one actress. But it was like my dream, you know, to be Maid Marian. And I'd done costume fittings with the sort of braided hair and the veils and the horses. And
right.
I was in a slightly messy period of my life. Mm-hmm. So maybe that influenced them to discreetly recast someone superior and older.
It all worked out for everybody. Kate's
fine,
okay, you're okay.
Yeah, we're all fine. We're all friends, you know.
You'll have the text message where you talk about Robin Hood every day.
All good and well.
It is interesting, though, like when I think of something like that Robin Hood would have been. Like, if you look at your career, it's like...
What could have been?
No. But I guess my point is actually that you haven't had to do, like, many of those kinds of films in order to be a very successful, well-regarded actor. I mean, you obviously were... What's that face? What is that? Come on. You disagree with my premise?
I mean, no, carry on. I'm not going to interrupt. I'm just going to make faces that they can't hear.
She can't take a compliment, clearly. But you haven't had to do those kind of franchise films too much. You infamously, you were in G.I. Joe.
Infamously.
Well, you've been pretty frank on that one.
Yes, yeah.
Wasn't exactly... I mean, you knew what you were signing up for.
Great casting, yes. I did and I didn't, yes.
Okay.
No, it was fine. And it was fine, yes.
It was fine.
But I did it once and never again.
So I guess my point is that... An actor doesn't need those films, or do they?
I mean, I think they do.
Do they? Okay. You're like...
she's seeing all this. I think, you know, those... I think it doesn't actually work, the numbers thing in Hollywood, but it is a real part of it. So looking at Jen fused with Bradley on your wall, like she had the Hunger Games, and that was a huge box of success, and then she can be the lead in the films with the best filmmakers. It's hard to... It's hard without those numbers to really get those roles.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense always because great numbers don't always add up to numbers
of course.
In the end. But
so where does that put you in terms of like...
It puts me in like if I was out for those movies, I'd do them, all right? I'm kidding. Get off with them all the time. but you know, to be totally honest, and this is true... You either want to be a massive movie star or you want to be an actor. And I think I could live in LA and I'm sure I could schmooze and do my thing if I was really
if that
really
was your
ambitious
priority.
In that yeah. way, but it's not. I'm just not. I love my career. Yeah. I love being able to play a wide variety of people, which movie stars can't, because you go to see them, you don't want to see them in a big fat face and, you know, like basically schizophrenic and the weird roles that they take on. But it's a different kind of career, yeah. and both equally commendable. But I think this suits me.
How often do you even see the big spectacle, like the temple things? Do you watch those kind of films much, like the superhero stuff? And like, do you ever find yourself watching that and being like, you know what? As much as I say yes. it's not for me, like that one.
Oh yeah,
that one could
I mean,
have
like
been
Joker, I can't wait for. But that's not the traditional. Right. But you know what I mean? It's a big movie
yeah.
with
well,
DC, Joaquin's
gonna
and it's
jump
and
on.
It's
then it's,
yeah,
yeah,
I mean, the kind of darker, the Dark Knight, you know, the Nolan yeah. versions. I love those. And I'm often very much in the mood for them. I love a Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. And the Marvel thing, I think, is fantastic. I haven't seen Wonder Woman. I have seen Wonder Woman, and okay. I loved it. That
Good.
Was great. And the new Captain
Marvel.
Yeah. I haven't seen yet, but Fair I work enough. With Ryan Fleck and Anna Boden, so I'm excited to see that.
I'm a big Mississippi Grind fan.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of that one.
But, you know, so there are versions of them.
Yeah. I'm excited for your old buddy Pattinson. He's going to be Batman. That must mean it.
RP crushing it. I
mean,
know.
That alone makes it interesting.
That
like that he's interested
great, yeah.
in it.
It's great. He's been so smart with his choices, and I'm thrilled.
Yeah, I mean,
he's got Nolan to Batman. It just doesn't get better.
It's insane. Yeah. And because like, you know, being at MTV, I talked to him and all those folks at Twilight for like
27 years.
Oh my God. It felt like 27 years. I'm sure to them too.
Yeah.
And to see everybody coming out of it, him and Kristen, like are
I
both just like the top actors around.
But Rob is a real cinephile. He deserves all success. I mean, he's a strategist.
Yeah.
He's smart. And he's picked such interesting roles with interesting filmmakers, and just cumulatively adds up to Batman. So
yeah. Well, you could say, yeah, as
soon I'm going to be a 60-year-old Catwoman crawling out of my... I'm just going to...
Better late than never. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back. You're a New Yorker now.
Yeah.
And you were a New Yorker at birth, very briefly.
Yeah.
But you were raised in London, correct?
I was, yeah.
So has it always been basically London, New York, London, like back and forth throughout
your life?
I
mean, it was London from 18 months old to 18 years old.
Okay.
And New York either side of that? No, actually, that's not true. Then I had some New York, then I traveled. I was really based in London until 3 years ago when I moved here.
Got it.
And I love it here.
So why? I mean, they're twin cities. They are, like, if you love one, you're going to love the other.
Yeah.
I grew up here in New York, and I do often say that
London. You feel at home in London,
yeah,
yes.
Totally. Yeah,
totally. The irreverence and the kind of openness.
Yes. The fact that I don't need a driver's license in either one. Do you have a driver's license?
I do.
Oh,
I have a UK one and a St. Thomas USVI one.
Very impressive. You're more of a functional adult than I am. So why New York over London now?
I really miss London and London's home. I live in New York because I find it inspiring and energetic, and it sounds trite and it sounds predictable, and there's no like revelation here. Guys,
have
New
you
York
heard about New York?
Really good energy. But for me and my character, I sort of need to be galvanized by that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And if you leave New York and you come back, like the entire thing is shifted in 3 weeks' time. If I go back to London, it's like I press play and I'm like, and where were we?
Right.
And I love that when I'm older, but right now I want to be motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something really motivating about this city.
Yeah, I think if like... Yeah.
And exhausting.
Well, no, but I hear everything you're saying, because like people, you know, also talk about LA, and LA has its merits, but I feel like I would like die alone in a cocoon, like in a sad,
well,
dark cave in LA.
Well, noticing that 20 years have passed because there's no seasons.
Yeah.
I definitely need seasons.
Yeah. So growing up, would people around you growing up be surprised that this is where you ended up? Like, were you kind of like a big personality? Were you somebody that was craving attention, that enjoyed the spotlight as a kid, or?
I think I was a real mix, and still probably am, of reading as extremely confident and also extremely shy. It doesn't quite add up. It's quite English boarding school abandoned child behavior. Like,
lie down on the couch if you want to.
Gotta stand up, dying inside. And no, I'm also a pathological optimist, which is not very English.
No.
Was I as a child? I remember, it's funny, I remember watching Great Expectations, the Cuaron version with Gwyneth. Epic.
Great.
And we watched it at school, or like the whole of the senior school watched it. And so many people thought that I was like the old lady. Not her, not Gwyneth. You thought I was going to give myself the biggest compliment ever. They were like, you're going to be just like that when you're older. Which,
no, you're Anne Bancroft or whoever
it was. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, cha-cha-chaing around with a cigarette holder and a few hats on my head. So I was kind of like, maybe I was a bit of a character, clearly. I was quite shocked to hear it from like seven different people, but... I was both of those things.
Were your parents similar personalities? Do you have equal parts of both of them in terms of?
Dad was quite academic, but also kind of a hippie. It doesn't. Yeah, no one really adds up to what they should. Mum is a real mum, sort of open and loving and nurturing. Yeah. And I don't know. No, I'm different.
What was, because in reading up, like, it sounded like your mom had a string of very interesting kind of jobs. Like, was she like, was she an acting teacher? Did she, what was her relationship with the Lee Strasberg Institute?
She went there when I was little, I think just out of curiosity and like it sounded fun, but I don't think she ever meant to be an actor. But then she became great friends with Anna Strasberg, and she set up the Lee Strasberg Institute in London and ran it for a year because they wanted to open one there. And she was sort of, I don't know, capable.
So what was your vision then of the profession as a kid?
I mean, I don't remember it. I don't remember that. But she used to take us to the theater all the time and the ballet, so that we were kind of involved in that world. And she's definitely prone to drama. There was like opera blaring and food cooking and eccentric people around. So I think it felt sort of theatrical.
Yeah.
But without, there was no one else that was an actor around me.
And what were you into as a kid in terms of the arts? Like, were you seeing plays? Were you just watching TV like every other, like?
I was seeing plays. I'd see ballet, often dragged to it. Museums were really tiring, but the odd little thing would jump out. You know, I was a normal kid. Yeah, right. I used to watch films that were, like, very into horror films at quite a young age.
Oh, really? What were you scarred by or affected
like
by?
Like Poltergeist and, oh, God, The Exorcist. I watched far too young. My kid is really prone to the dark as well. Like every time we go, when we were back in England for Christmas, we go to like a crib service. It's like a sweet thing at Christmas time. All she wants to do is be in the graveyard from two. She's just like, but we're quite sunny on the outside.
Sunny on the outside, dark on the inside.
Yeah, but those are the kind of movies. But also, bad TV. And I liked reading, bit of a bookworm.
So when you come back here when you're around 18, yes?
Yeah.
And what was the goal? Was it?
I went to Lee Strasberg for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Lot of training.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went traveling around Central America, a lot of mind expanding. And then I came back for a couple of months and did a bit more at Strasberg, which was really, it's really interesting technique. It's very therapeutic. And then I went back to England and demanded that this agent take me on and give me a chance and put me up for 5 things. And if I get one of them, great. And if I don't, he never has to see me again. And I got number 4. I was very lucky.
What was number 4? Was that the TV show? Was that...
Number 4 was this movie called... I went straight to radio. It's called... Two Wheels Only, maybe. It was a biker film that was actually sweet. And then, but we shot the sequel back to back. I mean, it was just a funny. And then I did a BBC thing, and then I did this Fox series.
Keen Eddie.
That was a firework from one big season and then disappeared.
Got it.
Otherwise, I'd have been 28 or 27 still doing it. So in a way, it's a good thing.
And off of that, was Alfie or Layer Cake the first?
I got cast in Layer Cake before I got cast in Alfie, but shot Layer Cake before Alfie.
Got it.
Within 3 days of each other.
Right.
Rapping.
So Alfie and Layer Cake, which is a hell of a 1-2 punch. Yeah. Did it feel like a lot all at once?
It was so exciting.
Yeah.
It was so exciting. I mean, Alfie felt like a huge movie. Layer Cake felt like a movie. Daniel Craig wasn't James Bond yet, but he was a pretty amazing actor.
Yeah, he jumped off the screen.
Yeah, I knew his work. But Jude was a huge actor, and then it was Susan Sarandon and Marissa Tomei and Jane Krakowski. It was like this. It was just a very exciting thing. It was a big budget.
So what?
Big trailer and like.
I'm sure that's a
It was really
Hollywood movie making.
I couldn't quite believe where I was.
And on the Layer Cake side, this was also Matthew Vaughn's directing debut, as I recall, right? just what do you remember about that experience? I mean, Daniel already was like a successful actor. It wasn't like he was an unknown. It was just that was the one that kind of launched him.
He wasn't to the a next. Movie star yet, but he was very respected. He'd done a lot of theater. You know, he was a very successful actor. Yes.
Like, did you feel like you had like a justifiable like seat at the table then? Like, was ignorance
oh,
bliss?
God,
of
no.
Oh, okay.
No.
You were like.
No, I mean, I think in Layer Cake, I felt like, oh, it's a bit of a tits and ass part. Right. You know, to be honest.
Right.
But I didn't mind.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm female and gendered and no, but at the time I was like, great, whatever, you know, it was mm-hmm. exciting and it was a big movie, but there wasn't didn't require a lot of me.
Yeah.
But also in the company of some astounding British actors.
And then, I mean, off of those two films, suddenly you're everywhere, it seems like. You know, it's that...
It wasn't off of those two films that I was everywhere. It was off the relationship that blossomed on the set of one of those films.
This is true.
Before either of those two films had come out, which was unfortunate, but also the way that life goes. But I think had those films come out, before that relationship came out, things might have been a little bit easier, but...
Was the first blush of celebrity fun? Like, did it turn at a certain point where it was like, this is cool, and then this is a nightmare? Or like,
I mean, there are perks. I'd be lying if I said there wasn't. You know, you can get tables at restaurants, but that's kind of where it ends. I mean, at first it was so strange. It was like, it was funny, but it always felt aggressive, just because the nature of the tabloids in those days in England were.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like they're sitting there going, nah, you know, it was really out to get you.
Yeah.
And the aggressiveness of
the paparazzi was insane.
It's just like, it's I can't describe it. I wish I could, but it's harassment, like real deep.
No, you feel like you're in danger.
You're scared. So it wasn't, it very quickly, I don't know.
The fun
I was way, so yeah. in love that I think that kind of shaped the entire thing. It was in many ways such a beautiful time, but... But yeah, I guess there were fun things ducking out through kitchens and like running down the street and occasionally losing them and being like, yeah, you know, that was kind of fun. But,
sure.
And of course, we were sort of glamorous. And I suppose as a young girl, that was fun for a minute till it wasn't.
And what about in terms of like, did it feel like that kind of stuff, the celebrity around a relationship was overwhelming like your career to the point where you weren't getting... the opportunities you would have had because like in the minds of producers and studios, they were, do you think they were affected by your image at the time?
I don't think they were affected by my image at that time. I think it probably was in many ways, I became quite well known and that can be really useful. I don't think I was managed in the right way. I don't think I was manageable probably.
Yeah.
I grew up, I was like a kid in the 90s looking at how people behaved and I thought that's how famous people behaved and
right.
So I didn't really have the kind of filter or the protection to not, so I, you know, I was quite
like that wild child image was like an embrace, yeah, people like, were like, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do when you're a celebrity
and
you're like
the, yeah exactly and didn't realize that as a woman in that town you can't really behave that way some of the time, so I probably could have been protected a little bit more from my impulses, which were quite rebellious and quite fun. I don't think I made any enemies, but I, you know, there was probably a version of capitalizing on that success that I didn't really pay much attention to.
And did it feel like, I mean, you know, you say very frankly about like what the kind of role that like Layer Cake was there a feeling in your 20s that like, you were sick of that kind of a role that like that was
the... it didn't happen that much to be honest. I mean, Alfie I felt like I got to act in and then I did Casanova, which didn't do well, but it was definitely a part. I wish I'd done a little bit better at that part. And then I did Factory Girl, which was an insane
a huge
part
opportunity,
and then I did between that I did Shakespeare for 4 months in the West End, and so I was always like,
right.
I can't really think of another gratuitous part that I ever did other than Layer Cake, which was like also kind of cool because I get to look at myself at 21 and be like, wow,
it's documented.
Things have really changed.
Stop it.
That was epic. But you didn't know.
But you are frank about saying something like American Woman, where like you're the lead, it's your story, and it's like you've done a lot of great roles in films that are, as you said yourself, you're propping up male leads often. And that's something that's got to wear on you at a certain point where you're like, I'm I'm more than this. I can do that supporting role in my sleep.
Yeah. What's really sad is only just occurring to me that I'm more than this. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. I do think that that's a reaction to the world that I grew up in and being underestimated and feeling grateful.
Right.
Just for like being able to breathe air that great men have breathed. It's just, I promise you, it's that entrenched. I'm really very affected by that. So I feel like something to do with what's going on in the world.
Yeah, when was that? Was that shift coinciding with when the whole world started to shift a couple of years ago?
The time where it really changed was the first time I actually got paid, which was very recently, to do acting, not to go to things. Or, you know, I had to make money somehow, so there was advertising and that's all fantastic. But I'd really been underpaid quite horrendously now that I look back for the work that I'd done in big films. And the first paycheck I got, I was like, wow, that feels really good to be paid to act.
Yeah.
And it's shifted everything.
Because you were, as I was reading up on it, like you were talking about pay inequality before this.
I remember.
I'm not saying like you started this whole thing, but you were. You were upfront about like the fact that you knew for a fact that you weren't being paid what you were worth a few years back.
Well, I think I probably said that. I probably felt like it's hard to feel self-worth when you're not being valued.
Yeah.
It's hard to feel like an actor when you don't really get paid to act. In fact, you get underpaid to do it. You know what I mean?
It's pretty basic.
It's sort of an Ouroboros. It feeds into itself. Yeah, it's basic.
Yeah.
Something to do with this moment for women, which there are, you know, many different aspects to it, but something about like just actually saying, you know what, no, there's no reason why I should feel inferior to men, or walk into a room full of men and feel a little bit less than,
because, right,
you know, firstly I've given birth, so fuck you. I don't even know if you can swear on your show.
You can
meet you. And I don't know, I think it's consciousness, it's growing up, but now I'm like, wow, oh wow, there's some rage. There's like, I am not gonna tolerate what I tolerated. And I was fortunate, no one ever offered me sex for a part.
Right.
Quite offended at this point. I'm joking. English humor.
Got it. Received. Anywho.
That was a really inappropriate joke.
That's okay.
Thank you.
You're in the right space for that.
Okay.
Her publicist has abandoned her. She's like, you're fired. So
it's like that cartoon where there's a hole in the paper.
Exactly. Where'd she go? What happened?
Man, there goes my career.
No, impossible. You have a very interesting, eclectic kind of career going in that you're also in a big like cop thriller coming soon.
Yeah.
Which here's my
sex with Frankie Burns.
Is that how she sounds?
Kind of.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You do a hell of an American accent.
Thanks.
It's pretty impressive.
That is my job.
I guess.
Even though it's like, you are good at accents. I'm like, I am paid to do.
The asshole now.
No, you don't.
But here's my big question about that film.
Yeah.
It's 21 Bridges.
There are 21 of them.
But it was filmed as 17 bridges.
Somebody miscounted the bridges.
This is my question.
It's so funny. I just started calling it several bridges when we were shooting. Many bridges.
How does that happen? What happened?
Did somebody miscount? I assume that they just miscounted.
That's amazing.
But I have, you know, the back of my chair that says 17 bridges. I've got my 17 bridges mug.
That's going to be worth something. You should keep all that.
At some point we realize that, yeah, it would fit in your office, actually. Yeah, there are 21 of them. Let's hope they don't build another by the time it comes out.
Oh, God, reshoots. It's going to be expensive. Yeah. Something rewarding about that one? That's kind of more of a genre action.
It's genre, but it's also dark, and it's also conflicted, and it doesn't shy away from the kind of immorality that exists in the cop world and in the detective world and in the crime world. Like you're confused about who you love in that movie, and I think that's brave. It's definitely a complex look at that world, which is incredibly complex. So it feels like more of a kind of like Lamette, old school, you know, those kind of movies that they don't really make anymore. Yeah. Plus Chadwick Boseman is just,
he's the man. Yeah, yeah.
He's the man.
Yeah, he's...
And Stephan James and Taylor Kitsch and, I mean, everybody in that film is...
J.K. Simmons, right?
J.K. Simmons, stop!
This is a good one.
Every time he said words to me, I was like, I just couldn't. I was like, sorry. Yeah.
Does that, do you still get starstruck a little bit with, yeah, with certain kinds of actors? Is it a certain kind of actor? Because for me, it's like, I get most nervous about the ones that I, or excited about the ones I grew up with, the ones that like, when Kurt Russell came in here, oh, I was like, stop. Kurt Russell, come on. Like, yeah. Do you still have that? Do you still have that kind of, yeah, hopefully you don't lose that,
no,
right?
No, I mean, you know, it's a really, it's a small world. So, but it's really exciting. Yeah, I mean, I definitely get starstruck.
Who was the first movie star you ever worked with or met? Do you remember?
The first movie star I ever worked with, I guess, probably was Jude Law, who was at the time a big movie star.
Yeah.
And probably still is, sorry. Sorry, Jude. No, he's a massive movie star. Yeah. And yeah, that was probably the first, my first encounter with it. But that was like a whole, I was 21. I'd never been, you know, on a private jet or any of these amazing things. It was so exciting. That part of it was really fun.
Yeah.
I remember he took me to the Brian Lord CAA Oscar party. And I just couldn't cope with the level of celebrity in the room and got proceeded to get hammered with sort of like hanging out with the waiters because I just didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Tripped over a light. The light fell. The shade came off. The spotlight went in Tom Hanks's eyes. He went, ah! And then Jude saw me like commando crawl out of the room and into a bathroom to hide. So that was my first brush with like, but everywhere you turned, it was like Julia Roberts, I'm sure. Diane Sawyer, you know, it was.
Were you like that at the Tonys last night, or did you keep it a little bit more classy?
No, I try to contain my inner fangirl, but I'm excited. I mean, actually, the Tonys is amazing because they are the greatest performers
talent.
In the
just
world.
Sheer, so like,
to see like
yeah.
a sort of like little kind of vignette of snippets of these shows, and the talent is astounding.
Yeah. Are you eyeing another play or music? I know you mentioned your musical experience. So yeah. That was a pretty significant moment, I would imagine.
It was great fun, yeah.
I mean, that's Sally Bowles is like one of those ultimate roles that...
I would love to just be Sally Bowles forever and that's it. I loved it so much.
Yeah.
And singing and dancing on Broadway and not having to be a trained singer and just having sort of off nights where you're croaky and raspy and it's Sally, so it's fine. I mean, she's right. just a total nihilist.
Right.
In 30s Berlin and the world is crumbling and you're just smoking fags and it just was like, you know, in a pair of like French stockings and it was just fantastic.
Yeah.
It was really, really fun.
And theater, safe to say, is where you've felt the most, or generally speaking, the most rewarding experiences. Again, you mentioned American Woman sounds like film-wise was the most, but like generally speaking, theater is where the most growth is, the most day-to-day, like just enjoyment.
Yeah, it's like really tuning an instrument. You just get better doing it. You're forced to. It's massive and it's an Everest and climbing that can be really depressing and hard at times, but there's, you know, I like beating myself up and there's nothing quite like 8 shows a week to really just hammer yourself.
There you go.
But there's a good feeling that when it happens, that connection between an audience and you and nothing exists and you don't exist and it's a blissful feeling.
Well, I look forward to seeing you on the stage, hopefully soon.
Thank you.
And let's see, TLV, The Loudest Voice.
Oh, right, voice. I like, or just the, yeah. So tell me about the.
That's coming to Showtime.
Yes.
How many parts is that? I've only seen the first one.
That's 7.
7. I can't wait to watch the rest of it.
Yeah.
Everybody should check out American Woman, which is a great piece of work, honestly. An amazing cast and a hell of a performance. And the kind of small, intimate character study that I certainly enjoy and we want to see more of on the big screen in these times where it's superheroes or bust. I like those too. You can tell from the walls, but there's room for everything. Thanks for coming
on.
You are now a podcast veteran.
I love it.
Go back out. We're going to go back out into the rain and try not to catch pneumonia now.
Thank you.
Thanks for stopping by.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.